Blog Talk Radio.
Much Less Detail, the podcast. On a Saturday night, October 25th, 2014, I'm Dre. My co-host Jay will join us momentarily. Hopefully he will not have the same issues logging in as he did last week. And there he is right now. Jason, are you on the air?
I hope so.
Hello? Anybody home?
What? Is this thing working? Can you hear me now?
Is this thing on?
Well, that sounds more like our first show.
Hello? Yeah, no, we're all hooked up. We're all live. We're all connected. So everything's all good this week. Thank goodness.
Well, and I accurately did predict that we would have our world record beating number of live callers on our last show.
Indeed, we did.
Because it counted me 9 times.
That's the only problem with it is it was all you. It was nobody else.
Well, we said we were waiting for our first live caller, so I just thought I would just do it over and over. I got to keep the stats up.
Yeah. We got to fool sponsors into thinking we're popular, no matter what, whatever it takes. I like the sound of that. Coming up on today's show, we will take a look at NFL Week Number 8 action starting tomorrow morning. What? And ending Monday evening. And everything in between. And in the after show, I've got a little spiel I want to go on about pro wrestling and hero worship and little something I wanted to talk about there. You know, guys are so, you know, they worship their heroes so much. And I'm among those guys. I'm no different. And, you know, it all sort of came to a head for me in a recent conversation that was being had online and on another podcast. I'll talk about all of that in the after show. But first, I will do just a little bit of gloating about the Thursday night pick for the second week in a row. I get to start off the week one game up on Jason.
Yep, and that's still got you nothing.
Yeah.
That and a couple bucks gets you on the bus.
It gets me to within 4 games of you instead of 6, so I'll take it. I can't make up all 5 in one night, so I'll take the 1.
Yeah, well, we'll see if it carries over for you, because you started off 1-0 on me last week, didn't go so good. The week before that, I started up 1-0 on you, and we tied. We've been tying every week, so expecting something different would be just crazy.
3 weeks in a row, we've split every game that we've differed on right down the middle.
Yeah, so I mean, Denver, you know, I mean, listening to the broadcast and watching the game, you got the feeling. I don't know if did you watch the game? I have to ask that now before we start talking about games. Did you watch the game?
I wish you didn't have to ask that, because usually I'm up on this stuff no problem. No, I watched 0 seconds of the game last night, unfortunately.
I was about to say, that's good, because it wasn't last night.
Yeah.
No, it seemed like there was a little bit of frustration about your favorite topic, which is all of the defensive penalties. And it was lopsided for Denver in the game. And I do have to say, they were definitely getting the benefit on some of these calls, a lot of drive extending penalties, and it seemed like no matter what San Diego did, they just couldn't catch a break. They had gotten to within a touchdown in the third quarter. It looked like Denver had fumbled. In fact, the refs called a fumble, And it was close, but when you went to the replay, you know, the knee was down, the ball was moving, and it was pretty easy. In fact, it's funny now, it's almost a joke now, because CBS brings in this Mike Carey, the former official.
Yep.
And I swear, for the second or third week in a row now, they've brought him in, and he's just been like this is it, very resolute. This is the call, this is what I see. And every time the guys come back and do the opposite. And they go to him, and he's like, oh, nope, you can see right here, as soon as the knee hits, that ball's starting to come out, that's a fumble. And the ref comes back and goes, his knee was down, and he still had full control of the ball, no fumble. And even the guys in the booth were a little bit like, whoa, you know. And yeah, I'd hate to be that guy sitting there on national TV who's a former ref. He was a pretty good former ref. I didn't have it, you know. I don't remember Mike Carey as being a bad NFL referee. We know there's some bad ones.
Yeah.
And and that seemed to be a big swing, because Denver turned that drive into a touchdown and made it a 14-point game. And it wasn't really what you thought, where it was just going to be, oh, Denver's just going to blow their doors off. Well, San Diego started slow, but they could move the ball some. But that when you can't have your offense out there, and you can't have Peyton Manning in that offense out there being the beneficiaries of, you know, help. And it looked like they were getting a lot of help.
But he doesn't need any more help.
They still earned the cover. They still deserved to win the game. They definitely outplayed San Diego. But it was tough. It was a really tough game to watch. There was a lot of laundry on the field in that game. It was just difficult to watch. It was bad football all around.
That's what I was afraid of in the preseason. It was almost ruining the game. I know that's hyperbolic, but geez, you know, when you can't go more than one or two plays without the yellow flags flying around, that's no fun. Who enjoys that? So.
And I was driving home from work the other night, listening to sports talk radio, and basically the message these guys were given, who, you know, and it's funny that they also pointed out this Mike Carey thing, but I had already thought of it during the game. They pointed that out. They basically equated this kinda, not outright. They didn't come right out and say, they're a little more subtle about it, but they basically called it star fucking by the officials. That they were basically giving Peyton Manning all the calls, and that Denver was the team, all their possibly some behind the scenes whining, or even in front of the scenes whining about Seattle in the Super Bowl. And we were waiting for the other shoe to drop, you know, mm-hmm. after all that offense, record-breaking offense, record-breaking touchdowns, everything gets basically just manhandled and held in check in the Super Bowl. And I really don't want to believe that we're going that way, because if it just continues on, it's really going to make football ugly and hard to watch too.
Without seeing last night's game, I'm pretty sure we're not going that way. Everybody complains about the Stars getting the call when the Stars aren't on their team. So what I'm saying is, it pretty much evens out from what I've seen over time. When Denver goes back to San Diego, Phillip Rivers will be the star getting some calls, because I think it's more of a home team bias than anything else. I think officials are afraid to rile up home audiences and, you know, home teams, crowds. And I think some of the calls go that way, no matter who the home team is. It could be a terrible team with no stars. From what I observe, usually it's the home team that gets the benefit of the doubt in those circumstances, not so much the Stars. Now, the Stars might be better at manipulating their guys to draw penalties. I think Tom Brady and Peyton Manning are probably better than everyone else in the league at throwing a football in a position where their receiver outstretches and makes contact with a defender and draws a flag on the defender. I think they might be better at that than, say, the average quarterback, Brian Hoyer or somebody like that. But I don't necessarily think it's a star fucking situation. I think everybody whines. I think the cameras are on the Stars, so you see them whine more than everybody else. The camera's always up Tom Brady's nose, Peyton Manning as well, for that matter. But I think all the players whine about not getting calls. I don't think it's really more whining by any one person than anyone else. I mean, again, you know, take it with a grain of salt what I'm saying. I've never been to a football game in my life, so what the hell do I know? Maybe it is the stars that are bitching and moaning more than everybody else, but I know it's the stars that have the cameras on them more than anybody else, too, so I just assume that it's disproportionate that it seems like they're the ones complaining more than everybody else, but I don't necessarily think that's the case, but, you know, that's just what I observe.
I hope that's the case.
Yeah, I got a little more faith in the official. I think the officiating can be terrible at times, but not for necessarily nefarious reasons, just because some of those guys are bad at their jobs. But
yeah, it's not the NBA here.
Yeah, no Donahue's, not that we know of anyway. Football would be so hard to do that with. The field's so big, the athletes are so fast. I would think that's got to be about the hardest game to try to crank in one team's favor or another if you're an official, because there's just too many variables out there to try to control. I mean, if you got a guy running down the field, you know, and he's running a 4.240, and you got a defender right there, you know, how are you going to make that call in your team's favor, whoever you're, you know, supposed to be slanting the game toward if you're the official, you know, when it's that fast, and then completely away from that, you know, down near the line of scrimmage might be, you know, two linemen, an offensive lineman and a defensive lineman engaging in a tussle, and the line judge down there might have might be slanting it towards the other team. He might have a separate guy from your guy trying to slant the game the other way. He might just be throwing personal foul flags on the offensive lineman every play, you know, trying to make him out as the dirty player or holding penalties every play. I think that's too damn hard to try to do that with.
Yeah, I think the overall, though, if we have a lot more games like we had on Thursday night, I'm going to start coming around to your way of thinking about these illegal contact penalties and holding penalties. And I've been resistant to that so far because I said we haven't really seen a game's outcome determined by it. But Thursday night was the close. Even though it was a two-touchdown game, it was so, it was so off to one side.
Yeah.
Almost all these calls, that it was the first time it actually started to feel like there was just no way San Diego was going to win that game. And that you know, if you're that team and that's such a helpless feeling.
Sure.
When you just know no matter what you do, you just can't get a call or everything's going to happen against you. It's a very helpless feeling. So it was the first, and it was helpful. It was hard to watch because, yeah, I picked San Diego, but I'm not rooting, you know, I mean, other than trying to win a pick over you, I want to see good football. And I just wasn't, it was hard to enjoy is, I guess, the worst thing. You want to see it, and you want to know that what you're watching is fair and equitable, and it was borderline hard to watch. There had been World Series baseball on Thursday, I might have watched that.
All right, well, before our recap show Tuesday night, I'll have to make myself carve out time to watch I did DVR the game, so I'll have to make sure to watch that before we talk again.
And it gets worse as the game goes on, so it doesn't just go bell to bell like that.
Yeah.
As you get into the second half, as San Diego's trying to come back, it started to just start looking like there's no way they're letting these guys come back. And then to have what looks like an obvious fumble overturned, which is, you know, the call on the field was fumble. So you've got to see enough to overturn it. And it just wasn't there. And then you're just like, what? You know, at that point, the coach can throw a flag and go, wait, go back and look at that again. You guys really screwed this up.
I want a rechallenge.
And it was deep in Denver territory. I mean, it was like given San Diego the ball, I want to say at the 25-yard line or so. It was really deep. And this is right after they score a touchdown. that's a big momentum swing. You take a 7-point game, you could potentially be looking at touchdown to tie, and now it goes back the other way on a long drive for a touchdown, and game is over. That was it. That was it to me. That was game over.
I'll have to check that out and see how it looks from my end. All right, real quick, getting the plugs while I'm thinking about it. To hear the live show and the after show, you have to subscribe to the show on iTunes, searching for In Much Less Detail, the podcast, or you can listen to the archive version of this show right here on the live show page, which is blogtalkradio.com/InMuchLessDetail. If you want to email the show with any questions, comments, thoughts, curses, whatever, you send that to InMuchLessDetail@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at IMLDDre, Jason's at IMLDJTG, and all our picks will be up on the blog after the show is over, maybe an hour or so after the live show ends. And the blog site is InMuchLessDetail.blogspot.com. All right, here's what I'm doing tonight. No PFF stats, but I'm going to go to my own stats. I'm going to reference the stats that they put up a few weeks ago. You know how I like to keep up with my pet stats: rushing offense, rushing defense, passing offense, passing defense. I've always wanted to do this. I wanted to go back to week 4 and see who's done what in what areas, who's made great improvements in what areas, and who's made significant downturns in what areas, and I've sort of made my picks based on that. And there's some, to me, very interesting upticks and downticks based on that. It may completely wash out. It may mean nothing. My pick, I might go, 2-13 this week or what have you, but I've always wanted to do this to try to see who's made significant moves in the middle of the season one way or another, and see if I can try to predict what's going to happen based on that. So we'll give that a try tonight. It's probably going to be very dry and boring. It's just going to be me repeating, oh, this team in week 4 was this, and then now they're this. And
Well, thanks for the warning.
Yeah.
I'm going to go make a sandwich.
Everybody
start,
get...
when you start your picks, I'll hit the mute button and just go walk away for a while.
Everybody go get your coffee now. Get ready. All right, we're going to start off with a game that's going to take place less than 12 hours from now. How crazy is this? If you're a soccer fan, you can pretend like this is, the premiership, and you're waking up in the morning in America, and you get to watch some football, not football, but football tomorrow morning. The London game, in case you have not heard, in case you've been under a rock, the NFL game in London for week 8 is taking place at 9:30 Eastern Time a.m., American Eastern Time, 8:30 Central Time. So get ready, get on Fox, and get ready to watch some live football tomorrow morning at 9:30 Eastern. How crazy is that going to be? The Detroit Lions at 5-2. They're 2-1 on the road. The Atlanta Falcons at 2-5. They're 0-4 on the road. This is supposed to be a home game for the Atlanta Falcons. I'm sorry, London's not Atlanta. The differences between the two cities would take up the rest of this show and then some. I'm not even going to get into it. This is not a home game for Atlanta. It's Detroit versus Atlanta in London. Detroit is a 3.5-point favorite against the Falcons. Jason, what's your pick?
Yeah, I'm sticking with what happened with this last London pick. The neutral site will tend to favor the better team. Now, you may have some – I don't know if you have any crazy week 4 stats that we can manipulate into making Atlanta somehow an improved or better team. I'd be shocked if you did. That'd be kind of like saying I was on my way home from work and I saw Bigfoot riding the Loch Ness Monster. But
you did?
Atlanta –
oh, my God.
Yeah. No, Atlanta's terrible. Their defense is hideous. Detroit's offense hasn't been great, but their defense is the best in the league. You said it was shocking that there was a poll that fans actually partake in last week that rated them as the number one defense. Well, now the stats bear it out. They have the number one overall rated defense in the league. Atlanta is scoring less and less and less and less points every week. They look lost. Defensively, they're not stopping anybody. I do not see any way Atlanta hangs in there. Even if Calvin Johnson doesn't play, I know he made the trip. I would not play him if I was Detroit, just because they're not going to need him. They haven't needed him in the last couple of games. They're not going to need him against this Atlanta squad. They are lost. I think Mike Smith is probably out of a job here at the end of the year. This was a defensive-minded coach who has not improved this team's defense since he took it over. They just keep getting worse. I like Detroit squish.
Well, I do have some crazy stats for this game and for every game, as I already said. Even before I get to the stats, I'd have to give props to Detroit. They're 5-2. Not totally sure how they've gotten there. They've really found ways to win games that under Jim Schwartz we know they would have found a way to lose those games. They're doing it with zero running game. They are next to last in running in the NFL. So there's one stat against them. The defensive stats, the one defensive stat against them for me is looking back at their pass defense week 4, number 3 in the league at 5.8 yards per pass attempt, and they've bumped that up now. They're giving up 6.6 yards per pass attempt. It's a slight increase. I'm not saying that they're just off the rails, but I'm saying that level that they had set for defense, maybe not sustainable. Maybe they're not nearly as good as the numbers may have said that they were. Now, Atlanta needs to get their shit in order. They need to obviously block a whole hell of a lot better. That effort they gave last week against Baltimore, you know, they're going to have to definitely block better, or else Detroit will squish them. They will absolutely run them over. But I call me crazy. I'm going to go with Atlanta here. Their pass defense in week 4 they've gotten worse. They're 24th at 7.7 yards per pass attempt. Now they're 29th at 8.8. So they're falling off the rails defensively, and their offense hasn't gotten it in gear lately. But this is more of a hunch, I guess, than anything. I think they're going to get it in gear. I think going out of the country is going to be good for them. They're going to get to sort of hit a reset button, clear their minds, and get back on the right track. I'm sorry, Detroit is not going to have Reggie Bush. They're not going to play Megatron, likely. They're likely not going to risk him getting out on the field, like you said. You wouldn't even put him out there, and I think they feel the same way. They're running out of tight ends, like their top three options at tight end are all out of this game. I think Atlanta's got a shot here. I think this is their chance. I think if they're going to get a win in their current doldrums, I think this is the opportunity to do it. I think Detroit's flying pretty high, and I think they might be about ready for a crash. And I'm going to take the Falcons to pull it out. I don't believe in them to rally all the way and get back in the playoff race necessarily, but like I said, I call it a hunch. I think this is a good spot for the Falcons to sort of get out of their own heads and just play a good football game against a team that's obviously beat up and shorthanded and pull out a victory overseas.
So how much of this is that you're picking Atlanta because you just got the feeling Atlanta's going to win, or we're still kind of set in our ways with the Lions where we just keep waiting for the old Lions to show up, and every week they don't. We're just like, oh, that's gonna happen. It's gonna happen. It's gonna happen. Is it some of that? Is there some of that going on here with us? I mean, I picked Detroit, but I still feel it. I think neither one of us would be shocked if the stupid Lions showed up.
Here's what it is for me. More than that, that might be a little part of it. Here's what it is for me. More than that. How many damn games are the Lions supposed to win without their Hall of Fame wide receiver? If they're this fucking good, if they're going to go 6-2, missing Calvin Johnson for 4 weeks, what are we saying? What are they? Are they that you? Don't you have to say they're one of the best teams in all of? Now I'm sure you might want to say that you did pick them to win the NFC Central. This is one of your teams, so you might be more inclined to say that. But I just cannot believe. Even more than the stupid Lions thing, even more than the Jim Schwartz cloud hanging over them, I would have to be admitting that I think Detroit is primed to be a Super Bowl contender if I believe in them to go this hot without Calvin Johnson all these weeks. it's got to run out eventually just because he's their best player. He's a Hall of Famer, and they're going to just keep winning games without him? I can't buy it.
I think the hardest thing for us to accept is that if Detroit wins this game, we could potentially be looking at the Cowboys and the Lions being the best teams in the NFC.
Yeah, through one half of a season, absolutely.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah,
you know
that's we're in bizarro world.
We are. As much props as I'd want to give them for doing that, you can't take it away from them. At the same time, I certainly would be looking at them with a crazy eye as far as the second half of the season, because I wouldn't assume that's going to keep up.
Well, you know, of course, I'd love for you to win this pick, because I'm a Falcons fan, and they desperately need a win if they're going to hang in this division. So, hey, I hope you're right, but I don't think you will be.
The Cincinnati Bengals desperately need a win as well. They have fallen off a cliff. They started 3-0, and since then, it has been ugly. 0-2-1. They return home where they're undefeated so far this year. They're 2-0-1, of course. And they're hosting another red-hot team that I'm not sure if I can believe in, the Baltimore Ravens, who are 5-2 and mauling folks at this point of the season. Baltimore is being believed in by the bettors. They are 1.5-point road favorites at the division champion Cincinnati Bengals. And I'm going to roll with the bettors on this one because Cincinnati is just awful at this point of the season. I've heard some Marvin Lewis talk once again. You know, this happens every year when Cincinnati sort of crashes from their lofty heights. Usually it's later in the season around playoff time when it happens. But this year it's happening right now and right in the middle of the season. That they are just looking like a terrible, terrible team. Again, missing their best player, you know, A.J. Green. Same thing as Detroit Lions. Cincinnati hasn't dealt with it quite as well as Detroit has. And looks like he's not going to play either. Once again, no A.J. Green. Cincinnati, if you recall, found a way to go into Baltimore in week one and win 23-16 because whatever offensive game plans they were working and little dipsy-doo plays they were trying to come up with, when Baltimore tied them up late, they said, okay, how about this Andy Dalton to A.J. Green play? I think this works. And they ran that play, and they got a touchdown, and Cincinnati won the game. Well, guess what's not going to happen tomorrow? They're not going to go Andy Dalton to A.J. Green. I don't know what they're going to do because they have, like I said, fallen off a cliff in the last few weeks. Their pass defense, week 5, 15th in the league, only giving up 5.4 yards per attempt. And now you include that Carolina overtime game. And, of course, it's going to go up because that defense is worn out, slap tired. They're now 27th in the league in pass defense, giving up 6.4 yards per attempt. And now Baltimore comes in with Joe Flacco and Torrey Smith and Steve Smith. They've really hit on something with their offensive coordinator, Gary Kubiak. This is one of those perfect matchups as far as my little retro stat, my comparison stat. This is where a team has markedly improved in one area and on the exact opposite side of the ball, their opponent has really decreased in the other area. I told you about Cincinnati decreasing in pass defense. Here's what Baltimore's done in passing offense since week 4 when they were 13th. Before week 4, they were 13th, and they were only averaging 6.0 yards per attempt. Now they're 9th in the league in passing, and they're averaging 7.6 yards per attempt. That's a huge leap up. They are making huge plays downfield with the Smith brothers, who are not brothers, Torrey Smith and Steve Smith. Baltimore balling right now, and I cannot possibly figure a way to take Cincinnati. They need this win desperately, but I don't think they've recovered from that overtime game yet. I think that sent them into a tailspin. They certainly didn't recover last week getting shut out by Indianapolis, and I don't think they're going to recover for this fierce division battle this week. I got the Ravens pretty easily.
Well, I think we're late to the party here with Bengals, aren't we? Because, wow, it looks so good. And then it's turned around and turned into so much shit. And it's amazing. I mean, this was my Super Bowl team. I was riding high. I was thinking, wow, you know, these guys are looking really good. And then you turn around and, you know, we look at this. We've pointed this out before. yeah, they sprung one trap on the Ravens there in that first game after they should have been blowing the Ravens' doors off and still allowed them to come back and tie the game and then got that last touchdown. And then they beat Atlanta, and then they beat the Titans. That's 3-0, but in retrospect now, that should have been 3-0. And then they turn around. They give up 33 points in their first three games. They give up 107 points in their last three games. This game isn't even – I don't think this game is going to be particularly close. This is going to be the Ravens. I also think this is a squish. And it's not necessarily that I think that the Ravens are leaps and bounds better than Cincinnati. I think this is just you've got the hot team and the not hot team meeting up at a really inopportune time for the Bengals here. So Ravens have ever since that Panthers game, you know, that sort of like that Steve Smith revenge game, Baltimore's found it. Something's clicked. These old guys are getting it done. Joe Flacco's been looking great. You don't even have to worry about talking about their defense because Baltimore's just putting up the points. And then you've got the Bengals, and we both, neither one of us thought that they were going to do much against Indy last week. We didn't see it being that ugly. They got shut out. How do you get shut out in this day and age? And if you're supposed to be a good team, even the bad teams score a field goal or get a garbage time touchdown. They got nothing. They got goosed. No, this one's easy. We concur. Ravens in a big way.
Yep. So you know what that means.
Bengals are going to win.
Our third highlight game is the best matchup of the week by record. It's the 5-1 Philadelphia Eagles coming off their bye, going into Glendale to visit the 5-1 Arizona Cardinals, who are 3-0 at home, and they just keep getting it done. No matter what, they find a way. The Eagles are only a 1.5-point underdog at the Cardinals, with Interception Santa back under center. Jason, what's your pick?
This is an interesting spread because you can't even give Arizona the 3-point home push here. You know, you can't give them the okay. What's going on here? So
no,
money
it's two
is
5-1 teams. Maybe they don't deserve that.
Maybe not, but the money's going towards the Eagles. Well, you'd think if two teams are so quote unquote evenly matched up that you would just give them the cop out line and you just go Arizona -3. So something's driving that. Money, something's driving the bettors towards the Eagles, but it's not driving me towards the Eagles. I have been riding the Cardinals these last few weeks. You know this, much to your chagrin, because I've been picking up some pretty cheap wins with the Cardinals. I'm looking for them again. We'll see. Yeah, the Eagles are rested up after a bye, so maybe that defense will have 1 week of being able to tolerate being on the field for 15 minutes, you know, for 45 minutes, because their offense is only going to have 15 minutes of time of possession. We've both admired the job that the Arizona coaching staff has done with Arians and I believe was it Bowles, the defensive coordinator. We can't give them enough credit that they're slapping together a good defense, or at least a competitive defense with a lot of spare parts, but the Eagles, yeah, that's 5-1. But who's 5-1? Do I find more impressive? I'm going to say it's the Cardinals. They've done it with backup quarterbacks. They've done it with makeshift defense. I trust them more than I trust the Eagles. I'm taking the Cardinals here.
I can't blame you for that. I'm going to take the Eagles, and I don't feel good about it at all. I think they're going to outrush the Cardinals. I think they're going to outpass the Cardinals. And I think they're going to eke out a victory because I don't know how Arizona stayed close up to this point, but they're probably going to stay close in this one, even though I personally think Philadelphia is the better team on both sides of the football. This one is an interesting one as far as my little comparison stats thing. Philly has downgraded in passing offense since week 4. They were second in the league at 8 yards per attempt, and they've fallen off to seventh in the league at 6.9 yards attempt. But Arizona. I talked about them last week, maybe starting to age. Of course, they shoved it up my ass, but the numbers still sort of bear it out. Week 5, their pass defense was 18th at 6.8 yards per attempt, and now they're 31st in the league in pass defense at 7.8 yards per attempt. Now, one of those games to make those stats skew that badly, Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos, who almost set a fucking single-game record. Okay, that's one, obviously, outlier that's going to skew things that way. The other two games, however, were against Kirk Cousins and the Washington Redskins, who was so bad they had to bench him, and the Oakland Raiders last week. So it's not all Peyton Manning that's making those defensive numbers go backwards. Arizona's first in the league in pass defense. Shady McCoy's, I don't think, is going to have another easy time coming off the bye, but I still think Philly's going to outrun Arizona because Arizona just has not been good running the football this year. Andre Ellington has shown flashes this year, but it's been more catching the ball out of the backfield and doing something with it than running the football. I don't think Arizona is going to establish much of a run game tomorrow. Hopefully Michael Kendricks will be back for Philadelphia. He's their stud middle linebacker. That would make a big difference in them stopping the run. But I'm going to go with Philly. Philly's offense off a bye, nice and rested, versus the 31st ranked pass defense in the league. I'm sorry, I got to go with the Eagles. But I don't feel good about it, not one bit.
Yeah, especially with us disagreeing on this game, because I've been reaping some benefits off of this Cardinals team.
I know.
Watch out.
I'm going against them one more time. Our fourth highlight game, the Sunday Nighter, should be scoreboard lighting up, should be fireworks everywhere. It seems like when we predict that, it doesn't go that way. But the New Orleans Saints hosting the Green Bay Packers, two Hall of Fame quarterbacks, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, doing battle. One of them struggling big time. The New Orleans Saints, 2-4, looking at 2-5, dead in the face. Can they get it together at home in the Superdome in prime time against the 5-2 Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers, who's playing his ass off lately? Packers look so impressive. They are, however, not the favorite in this game. I was surprised at this line. Green Bay is a 2.5-point dog at New Orleans, people thinking this is the game for the Saints to get it together. I disagree. I got to go with the Packers. I'm going to make the Saints prove it to me. I've been going almost on blind faith with the Saints for a while now, and they haven't found a way to get it done. I don't know if it's Jimmy Graham not being able to produce. I don't know if Drew Brees is starting to slow down. I don't know if the run game and their ills, their running backs kind of being in and out. Pierre Thomas is not going to play tomorrow. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but the Saints just have not put it all together yet. They got to prove it to me. I'm going to make them prove it to me tomorrow. I don't want to say I'll be rooting for them, but they are my Super Bowl picks, so I will sort of be rooting for them to turn it around, because it's got to be soon. It's got to be pretty much now or never for the Saints to turn it around and get it back on track. But I'm going to go with the Packers because this is another sort of perfect matchup for my comparison stats. Green Bay, since week 4, 21st in passing offense, 6.8 yards per attempt. Aaron Rodgers says, relax, and look at that. Now they're averaging 7.8 yards per pass attempt, a full yard per pass attempt they've jumped up since before week 4. And the Saints pass defense giving up 7.3 yards per attempt, now giving up 7.7. They're getting worse at the wrong time. I think Aaron Rodgers might go in and throw for about 400. I got Green Bay in a shootout in the Superdome.
You know, I'm not even sure this is going to be a shootout. It would be nice. It would be entertaining. I'm with you. I agree. I've got the Packers in this game. I don't understand the spread. I think there's a lot of hope in that spread. I think there's people just, you know, I don't know how many. I've seen some crazy spreads this week so far, and this is another one. I do not understand, unless there's some injury we don't know about or some trend that we don't know about, that even gives me any idea that the Saints are going to be the better field. This, shockingly, when I was actually looking at this, did not realize the Saints actually are the league's second-ranked offense. Did not know that. And you've managed to ride that to 2-4. Their defense is bad, but it's not like league worst, you know. It's not like Tampa bad. It's not Atlanta bad. It's bad, but it's not horrible. Now, Green Bay, for the season, none of their numbers look that great. Their offense is not that great. Their defense is middle of the league. Passing offense, rushing off, everything. They're not doing anything great, but they're not doing anything really bad. But I think a lot of that is skewed by the bad start that they had. And they, you know, this whole Aaron Rodgers relaxed thing, I mean, we kind of, like, we joke about it. I'm not so certain he was aiming that to the media as he was aiming that to his team. Because I think the team needed to relax. And they're taking on the personality now of their leader, you know, who just basically said, hey, everybody, chill out. We're going to be fine. And he's just put that team on his back. And that's what you need in your star quarterback or your top player. You just need that sort of calming influence. You don't always need the, like, crazy intensity, you know, like the Tom Brady yelling, rah, you know, on the side. You don't need that all the time. Sometimes you just need somebody who's going to be like, hey, you know what? It's going to be all right. We're cool. And whatever that was, as soon as that happened, this looks like a just vastly different team. Even with defensive injuries, they're still managing to get things done. With virtually no running game, they're still managing to get this done. They're just going out there, playing football, and they're relaxing. And they're just getting the job done. I don't think the pressure is on them at all tomorrow night. I think the Saints are the team that has all the pressure because it's sad to think they could go to 2-5 and still be in the division race. That's how awful that division is, but it's true. They could lose this game and still potentially win that division. It's the race to 6 this year for that division. It's terrible. It's really bad. So I think the Packers play loose. And the Saints play tight, especially after melting down last week against Detroit, where everybody thought, oh, no Calvin Johnson. Saints are going to roll these guys up. And they still found a way to yak that thing up. That weighs on you. Just like that tie weighed on Cincinnati, what happened to them last week is going to carry over into this week. We both like the Packers.
And you just made Aaron Rodgers' MVP case, because if whether he was trying to or not, if that's what he did, if he relaxed his whole team and put them in the state that they've been performing from that point forward, then that's pretty much what leaders are supposed to do.
Yeah, it doesn't always have to be the yelling, screaming, ranting, raving guy. Sometimes you just need a steady hand, and it's not even just relax. It's also don't panic. They didn't panic. They settled down, and they're right back in position to contend for this division again. That's what you do when you're good.
Now on to the rest of Week 8 in even more less detail, as rapid fire as we can get with me and my silly stats. Start with St. Louis on the road at Kansas City. It's the Battle of Missouri. It's the 2-4 Rams +7, plus a full touchdown at the 3-3 Chiefs.
You know, this is a funny one for you, because this is your bane of your existence last year, which was the Kansas City Chiefs, and it's your new man crush, Austin Davis. And they're kind of, oh, they're going head-to-head. Who do you take? You know what? I'm going to be with you. I'm going with the Rams to cover the 7.
Wait a minute. How are you going to be with me? You don't know my pick. How does that work?
I know your pick.
You're wrong. I'm taking the Chiefs.
Well, that means I'll win. Because you just took the Chiefs.
I'm taking Andy Reid and his weird geometry and his game planning. I don't think the Rams have the defense to keep up with that. They're at 8.1 yards per pass attempt this year. I think Alex Smith actually has a pretty nice day tomorrow. Houston and Tennessee.
He throws the ball 12 times a game.
Well, but that doesn't – yards per attempt doesn't care how many times you throw it, just what you do with it when you throw it. Houston and Tennessee, it's Zach Mettenberger time for the Tennessee Titans. They've tried everything else. They tried Jake Locker. They tried Charlie Whitehurst. Now it's on to the rookie Zach Mettenberger out of LSU. And the betting public thinks this of him. Houston is a 3.5-point road favorite at the Tennessee Titans.
I refuse to make fun of Carl. Carl Mecklenburg.
I was about to say, you just made fun of him. You said who?
Well, who? I have no idea who this guy is. Did he play college football? I'm taking Houston, so I can't say anything bad about this kid. Because if I do, he's throwing for four touchdowns.
I like the kid from what little I saw in preseason. I think he's got a nice big arm. I think he might have a future. I'm taking Houston, too. I can't take the rookie his first time out against J.J. Watt. I actually think that's unfair what Tennessee did to him. Really? That's my first start against that guy? Are you fucking crazy? What are you doing to me?
Wait a minute. I want to test this out here for a second. Go ahead and talk for a moment. I'm going to look something up because you can introduce the next pick, but I want to look something up while you're doing that.
Oh, boy. My other numbers or stats for the Houston-Tennessee games, Jadeveon Clowney might come back as well. Good Lord, him too? Sean Green's going to return for this game for Tennessee. Dude, watch where you park. He just got arrested over the weekend for parking in a handicap spot, so I don't know if that's going to affect him or not. But Tennessee's pass defense before week four, they were second in the league. They were only giving up 5.7 yards per attempt. I don't know what the hell happened to them. Now they're 21st in pass defense, and they're giving up 7.6 yards per pass attempt. And that's not against great teams either. That's Andrew Luck is awesome, but then Cleveland, Jacksonville, and Washington. I don't know what the hell happened to the Titans' defense, but they've been giving it up lately. I think Ryan Fitzpatrick is actually going to come in and outplay a rookie quarterback in his old home stadium. I don't think he's going to let the rookie outplay him in his return to Tennessee. I don't know if he has any emotions about returning to Tennessee, but I think he's going to actually have a nice day tomorrow. You get to what you were looking at?
You think that about Ryan Fitzpatrick every week?
Probably.
He's only second to Austin Davis in your man crushness this year. It doesn't get any better for the Titans. I just want to see their schedule here because they have the bye, which would have been the perf. If you're going to do this with the kid, don't you let somebody go out and get crushed by J.J. Watt and then prop this kid up and give him 2 weeks of practice for the bye week? Nah, that makes too much sense. but it doesn't get any better. Ravens, Steelers, Eagles, Texans.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's bad. Actually, the tail end of the schedule, Giants, Jets, Jaguars, that's three. That's when you start a rookie. That's confidence building right there. But it doesn't get any easier. So at this point, they're just throwing shit against the wall and seeing what sticks. Good luck with that.
Yeah, have fun. The Toilet Bowl game of the week, the 2-5 Minnesota Vikings, the 1-5 Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Good Lord, who wants to watch that game? Minnesota +2.5 down in Tampa.
Yeah, we pick them all. That's all I can say.
Yes, we do.
I'm going to go with the Vikings here. I've been more impressed by the Vikings so far than I have by Tampa Bay, and that's not saying much. But Tampa Bay, 30th on offense, dead last in defense. That's not going to get it done. At least Minnesota is playing some defense. Their offense isn't much better, but at least they've got a top half of the league defense, and they can run the ball. Tampa Bay can't do anything. I'm going to take the Vikings here to just win the game.
All right, this is Tampa's best chance for a win. They're coming off the bye. They get a chance to refresh a little bit. They're playing a bad team. Minnesota's not very good at all. And my little crazy stats. Look, I can't believe I'm doing this. I'm going to give some credit to Mike Glennon. All right? Before week four. I know. Before week four, dead last in the league in passing offense, 5.9 yards per pass attempt. That was their first game with Mike Glennon was week four. Since then, they're up to 24th in the league at 6.7 yards per pass attempt. I can't believe I'm giving credit to Mike Glennon for something, but he's actually got them throwing a little. Now, I know there's a lot of garbage time involved in that. I'm not an idiot, but I didn't think he was even going to be able to do that, even with garbage time. Now,
he's
guess who's last?
Them from really shitty to just shitty.
Exactly. Now,
wow.
Guess who's last in the league in passing yards? Yes. Teddy Bridgewater's Minnesota Vikings. I think this is their chance. I think this is Tampa's chance. And Muscle Hamster might get to do some running tomorrow as well. Seattle and all their troubles that they've had lately. That's the world champion Seattle Seahawks, who are 3-3 now. But the public still definitely loves them. They are -5. Seattle gives 5 at the 3-3-1 Carolina Panthers.
I'm not buying it. I think Seattle's defense has been giving up a lot of points, and that's uncharacteristic of them. Even though their offense looks okay, something just doesn't seem right. Maybe they're just kind of going through the midseason blues. I'm sure maybe your stats will help bear this out. But Carolina, boy, Carolina sadly might be the best team in the NFC South right now. And they are the first place. It's just painful to say this. But that 3-3-1 first place team, Carolina Panthers, I'm actually going to take the home team here. Seattle, not known for their road prowess. They're also traveling east. Carolina, they toughed out that tie. I think they actually benefited from that a little bit because they had no business tying that game, even getting a tie, which is better than a loss. Seattle's kind of reeling. I'll take Carolina.
Once again, with the caveat that don't pay attention to anything I say when it comes to Panthers games, I don't know what the fuck they're going to do. I have not picked them correctly yet this year, so it doesn't matter.
0-7?
Yes. So here we go. I'll take Carolina with you to cover that number. Even though the stat against them for the variance from a few weeks ago is a bad stat, they've gone from giving up 5.4 yards per pass attempt to 7.5. I have no idea what the hell happened in that time, but I'm still going to take them to cover because Seattle has been terrible defending the run ever since Bobby Wagner has gone down to injury. If they don't defend the run tomorrow in Charlotte, look out. Carolina might run all over them, and it might be Cam Newton doing it. He might get hyped up because of Russell Wilson on the other side of the field. I don't know what motivates him. Again, I don't know anything about Carolina because I can't get them right, so what the fuck. But I'll torpedo your pick and take the Panthers as well. So how about that?
Foiled again.
Down in Florida, the Fighting Fish of Miami are 3-3, and they are 6-point road favorites. They must be playing a terrible team. You're right. They're at the 1-6 Jacksonville Jaguars.
The Jags won their Super Bowl, right? They got their win. They can go right back in the shitter. I'm going to take the Dolphins to go up there. Even though I don't like them all that much, they're the much better team. That's at least worth a touchdown. I'll take the Dolphins here.
I concur completely. Jacksonville can go right back to sucking. Miami has stiffened up defensively. They went from 20th, tied for 20th in the league in rush defense before week 4 to 10th. They're nasty. Like I said, just the eye test. They got some guys on that other side of the ball in that front seven. They like to hit, and that's going to serve them well, especially against terrible teams like the Jaguars.
They can also get after a rookie quarterback. I mean, they were getting after Aaron Rodgers a little bit at the beginning of that last game. They're getting after people. Cameron Wake, that defensive front, they're going to eat Blake Bortles alive.
Yeah, Blake Bortles, pay up all your insurance premiums now. The Chicago Bears and all their bickering and craziness, they're still 3-1 on the road this year, so go figure that. Which explains maybe why they're only a 6-point underdog at the 5-2 New England Patriots.
Yeah, it's not enough. I'll take the Patriots here. I don't even have a lot to say about this game. The Bears are in disarray. There's no bear whispering here. This game's not in prime time. If it was in prime time, I'd be all over the Bears. No, this is just your old run-of-the-mill 1 p.m. Eastern start. Nah, Patriots squish.
And I might be all over the Bears if they would commit to the fucking run, if they would commit to Matt Forte. Look, the Jets and Geno fucking Smith showed you how to compete with the Patriots on Thursday night a week and a half ago. You have to commit to the run. Mark Trestman doesn't commit to the run. He never commits to the run. Matt Forte is going to run for, 6 yards a carry, but he's only going to get like 12 carries. And the Patriots are going to blow the Bears out of the water. This is another one of my perfect comparisons, that the Bears have gone from giving up 7 yards per pass attempt to 8 yards per pass attempt, and you can definitely tie that to losing Peanut Tillman to injury. And now Kyle Fuller is going to run around out there with a broken hand. That's a real good way to play cornerback against Tom Brady, is with a wrapped up hand. You can't even grab the ball or a receiver or anything else. And, of course, New England with their renaissance, they were averaging 5.5 yards per pass attempt before week four. Everybody said the Patriots are done. Well, now they're up to averaging 7 yards per pass attempt. It's so quick, it's so easy how they just turn the switch and bounce back, and the Bears aren't going to stop them tomorrow at all.
Isn't it amazing that the thing that we're ranting and raving about with Trestman is exactly what people for years were telling Jason Garrett to do? Run the ball. And look what it's done for the Cowboys. Wow!
Run the ball.
Lean on your horse. You have one of the best running backs in the league. Lean on him.
Lean on your horse while you got him, because you never know when he's going to snap something and hurt himself.
That's right. Now we get to go rapid fire.
Yeah, you're not going to spend any time on a Buffalo Bills +3 at the New York Jets, I assume.
No, Jets. They showed me something against the Patriots. I still think they're playing for their coach. As bad as that team is, I think they're playing for Rex. I like the Jets to get this one and cover.
I like the Bills. I don't feel good about it at all, but I'm going to take Buffalo in this one. Even though they lose their two top running backs, I don't trust Geno Smith to pull that effort off again. I'm sorry. I can't trust him. The 0-6 Oakland Raiders +6.5 at your Brown Fever.
Yeah, I'm actually, you know what, I'm taking the Raiders here. I like Cleveland to win this game, but I think that with this whole Brian Hoyer playing with this specter of Johnny Manziel and this whole benching thing after they play one bad game, I think that causes Cleveland to play a little tight. And Oakland, after they fired the coach, I think they've opened things up a little bit. They know they're shitty, so they just get to go out there and just play every week now. They're all just playing for jobs and contracts and all that stuff. So they're playing with no pressure. I like the Raiders to cover this number.
I have no idea why I'd like the Raiders to cover the number, but I'm exactly right with you. I think Cleveland should win the game because they really need to bounce back from losing to Jacksonville. If Cleveland busts another cherry this week, Jacksonville got to bust their cherry last week against the Browns. If Oakland gets to bust their cherry and get their first win, oh my God, that town is just going to explode. The whole Johnny Football thing, that's hilarious. After one bad game, they're clamoring for Johnny Football.
It's dumb, but it's happening.
And then Ben Tate got challenged. He got dared by the offensive coordinator, Brian Schottenheimer, that he doesn't think Ben Tate's body can hold up for a full game of wear and tear. So there's challenges going around everywhere with Cleveland. And with a really good team, I would say that that's going to motivate them and get them to play better tomorrow and cover the number. I don't think Cleveland's a very good team. I think it might backfire and they might be a little stiff and possibly be in line for an upset by the Raiders.
Ben Tate didn't have a problem toting the rock when he had to start for Arian Foster, did he? Oh, wait, no.
Yeah.
All right.
He had some injury issues then as well, but I don't think that's something you need to challenge him on if you're the offensive coordinator. I think you should be supporting your guy, you know. The Indianapolis Colts and Andrew Luck might be the hottest quarterback in football. 5-2 Colts -3 and a hook at the 4-3 Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, the Colts aren't going to play 3 minutes of hideous football to let Pittsburgh sneak out a win they had no business getting. Colts are rolling right now. I'm taking the Colts here. I'm back to my Pittsburgh hate. So I'm on them for a week. Now I'm right back off. Give me the Colts.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, I got to take the Colts too. I can't trust the Steelers. You know, it was funny what the Steelers are doing running the ball, you know, a few weeks ago with Le'Veon Bell and LeGarrette Blount, but that's fallen off. You knew that would fall off and bounce back to the norm. Indy's been blitz happy too, but that might go wrong, but I don't think it's going to go wrong against Ben Roethlisberger because he's a statue. I think that's another good quarterback to blitz and stifle with your defensive play. Monday Night Football sees the Washington Redskins and Colt McCoy gets the start. 2-5 Redskins are +10 points at the world's favorite team, the hot Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, I'm taking the points here. Washington is the fifth-ranked offense in the league. I don't care how bad they are. They're putting up the points. They're moving the ball. We, you know, Dallas, this is a good test in prime time for that Dallas defense. I'm taking Washington to hang within 10.
Are you saying they shouldn't have benched Kirk Cousins? I mean, what are you saying here? I mean,
we'll see. He might be back. You never know.
He was putting up some numbers, apparently. They are still fourth in the league at 8.4 yards per pass attempt. I'm with you. I'll take Washington to cover the number. I was trying to hit the music, and I hit the whistle. 10's a lot of points, and I don't trust the Cowboys. See you on the other side. And now into our VIP after show, where I got so nervous firing the music up that I hit the whistle instead.
I wasn't sure what the whistle was for. I thought maybe you're just signaling that we're done with all the picks. That's a new thing. A little premature whistle action there. We got too excited, and you know, hey, it happens to all of us.
So this will be fun. I'll get to run the computer out to the living room here as I get ready to change videotapes as I'm taping the World Series. But I know the one tape's going to run out like really soon, so I'll be changing that in the middle of our after show here.
Is that VHS?
Yeah, I'm the last guy with VHS. I'm the one. I'm the guy.
Wow. Maybe you may want to give your address out so everybody who has old blank VHS tapes can mail them to you.
No, I'm all good. As long as tape.com exists, I've got my guys. I can always order videotapes.
Tape.com.
Tape.com, just that simple.
Now, do they also sell scotch tape and duct tape and all that, too? Are they masters of all things tape?
No, but that wouldn't be a bad idea. They maybe should consider that.
So do you record it on SP? Or PP or LP. I'm trying to go back to my VCR days here.
You remember all those? No, unfortunately, my VCR doesn't have LP. The LP would do the 4-hour tape.
Yeah.
For if you had a 6-hour cassette. Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty good quality. Much better, obviously, than EP. But no, I unfortunately have to do EP because I don't even have LP as an option on this old VCR that I have.
You know, it's these World Series games being low scoring games do not need to be taken 4.5 hours.
Oh, no kidding. It's crazy.
It is obscene. The amount of commercial action and what should be a 2-hour, 45-minute game is taking 4 hours.
Well, that's why my tapes is going to run out, because these games are taking so damn long with all these commercials and pitching changes and everything else. But yeah,
I feel bad for you that you taped this and you actually do go back and rewatch them. So you're going to get to go back and rewatch this World Series.
Yeah, well, there's been some terrible ones in the past. So this actually is somewhat exciting at the moment, especially now that I see that San Fran's bounced back and made this a game, and now they're taking a lead.
Yeah, I'm watching it right here with you. I've got it on mute, and I've had it on the whole time we were on our show. Watching San Francisco, they were down 4-1, and now they're up 6-4.
Yeah, but of course that means the game's going to take like 5 hours because of all the pitching.
With this game, what was the first pitch? About 7 o'clock?
Yeah, something like that.
So wait, we're 3 hours into this game, and they're in the bottom of the sixth inning.
Oh, Lord.
So, yeah, that is – we're looking at – that is right, because I remember I was down here eating my dinner, and I got home from work, and I was eating my dinner, and my daughter was down here playing. And, it was maybe 7:15, and it was the first inning of the game. 7:15. Mm-hmm. So this is a 3-hour – this should be a full game of baseball – and we're in the bottom of the sixth inning. Well, the Giants are opening this thing up, so this thing can zip along now.
You must be ahead of me. I didn't. The pitch had not been thrown yet when you said they're opening it up.
So I have the delay. I have the good delay now.
That's right. I've got the Xfinity, the Comcast Xfinity high def Wi-Fi, whatever.
I have DirecTV.
Ah.
And we can, we'll take endorsement deals from either one.
I'm very happy with Comcast Xfinity.
Yeah, I've been a DirecTV customer since 1998. So, you know, either one of them want to step up to the plate and throw some money at us, I'd be more than happy to endorse your product.
I won't talk about the fact that I used to be a DirecTV customer and had to move along because my dish kept blinking out on me at very inopportune times. I won't even bring that up.
Like, I don't want to
mess up. Because I don't want to mess up Jason's money. That's my guy. That's my best friend. I don't want to mess up
his
endorsement, so I won't even mention that.
Do not mess with another man's money.
That's right. It's not good.
So how's your tape changing going? Are you waiting for the innings to change over here, or are you just doing it right in the middle?
I usually wait until the tape goes all the way to the end and pops out at me, and then I change it so it hasn't come to the end yet. But that would be proactive if I were to grab it in the middle of the in between innings and, you know, during the commercial break and just switch it out right then and there.
So we were talking about Bigfoot riding the Loch Ness Monster. You have a working VCR. That is that's right up there.
Most people's VCRs, I think, work. They just don't use them because who uses a fucking VCR anymore?
I sold my VCR, which I remember I bought for like $300. It was a JVC Super VHS, which was the good picture quality VHS, which by today's standards would still look like garbage.
Yes, absolutely.
We sold that at a garage sale for $5. That is not a good return on your investment, just so you know.
I got you beat. I just took my double-decker Go Video brand VCR.
I remember that VCR.
And took it to Goodwill. And
wow.
Gave it away. So,
well, make sure you claim that on your taxes. Make sure you claim that 65 cents on your taxes.
And that thing cost me $300, too. I had such high hopes and grand plans for that double-decker VCR. I was going to run a scam where I rented a bunch of movies and made copies of them for myself and then, you know, took the rental back to the video store. And so obviously I bought this thing, you know, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, you know, with that kind of plan. And it never came to fruition, not just because of my laziness. I didn't feel like renting a bunch of movies, but also because around the time I bought it, movie studios started making their videotapes with some sort of security protection where my copy, after I finished copying it, was completely jacked up. It was, you couldn't watch it. It was so dark and shadowy and rolling, static bars going through the copy of it. The quality was just absolutely terrible. And that really put a wrench in any plans that I had because I was going to start with mainstream movies, and if that worked out fine, maybe move to adult movies. And if that worked out, then, you know, maybe open up a little shop and make some money off the copies of those adult movies.
Wow, now you just wanted to bootleg copies of Coochie Pop. Admit it.
I didn't have to bootleg that. I taped that off of the independent film channel, and you know, I had my copy of it forever.
Yeah, I remember sitting on the couch at your place, and you're like, hey, let's watch this movie. I heard it was good, or I taped it. I don't know, you may have read the synopsis or something. Now, the name of the movie was not Coochie Pop. that was the name.
Although now you got me curious. I'm going to have to Google that and see.
That was the name of a band in the movie. And this was like the dumbest movie.
I absolutely remember the title of it. It was called All Over Me.
Yeah, it was horrid.
But I want to see if Coochie Pop actually comes up in the search engine if I put that in.
So, yeah, the movie itself was just bad. I mean, there was no point to it. We watched that thing, and I was just like, what did we just watch? I'm never getting this time back, ever. There's a lot of stuff on Independent Film Channel that kind of goes that way. I will not be getting an endorsement deal from the IFC, that's for sure. Or from the makers of Coochie Pop.
Yeah. I don't see anything about the movie. I see a lot of reference to Two Live Crew's rap hit Pop That Coochie, which was the clean version of their song, which was actually called Pop That Pussy, which brings me back to memories of Two Live Crew tapes. And speaking of tapes, the audio tapes that I used to have back in the day. That was
We all had audio tape.
Yeah, that was fun.
Making my little greatest hits albums and yeah, we all. Everybody anybody who had a cassette player did that. They taped off the radio.
Yep.
They'd buy cassettes. They'd have the double decker tape deck, and then they would, you know, and I'd put like my favorite songs all onto one tape. I still have in the storage room here a shitload of tapes. I mean, it will be fun to go and dig through those. Although I don't have the tape player to play them. That's the sad part.
Oh, well, you know, if I got an old VCR, you know I got tape players that still work.
I believe that. You probably got the Walkman and the headphones. You're still rocking.
I can't believe I'm going to admit this. There is a portable tape player / radio in my locker at work that I take out to listen to Titans games on Sunday afternoons when I'm at work.
That sounds like torture.
That's
like Abu Ghraib. You know, the guys at Abu Ghraib are listening to Titans games on headsets. I hate to tell you that. After the Naked Pyramid, they listen to Titans games.
No, they're not. They're listening to White Sox games.
No, they're listening to the White Sox post-game show.
They're
not listening to Farmio. They're listening to the post-game show. Let's get that straight. Anybody who's not from Chicago needs to go on to 670 The Score, because you can listen to it online. You can listen to The Score online. 670 The Score in Chicago. Yeah. You need to listen to White Sox postgame shows, because they are that is the dregs of society right there.
Yes, if you want to get tortured, you want to listen to.
It's as bad as it gets. But I love to listen to that shit, because I am a glutton for punishment.
Yes, you must be. No, I had the Walkman because I was, you know, living in Chicago the first 35 years of my life and never had a car, because you don't need one up there. So that was my trusty companion everywhere I went, on the bus and on the train. I had my headphones, had my Walkman. I was the Black Steve Bartman. Everywhere I went, I had my headphones. There's only a handful of times, I swear, over the years that I can remember going out and getting on a bus or a train that I didn't have headphones on. I felt naked when I didn't have my headphones. So I had the working tape player, the working Walkman. I was probably the last person to have it, because it was getting harder and harder every time I logged on to Amazon.com or somewhere else trying to find a working one. Over the years, it was getting more and more scarce to find one that, you know, to sell to buy from somebody, because they just stopped making them. You know, companies just, because, you know, they're completely obsolete. It's like VCRs. You know, if you tried to find a brand new VCR these days, you probably would be shit out of luck for that too. But I was the one. I was the guy buying the Walkman.
I can remember being in high school, and there'd be times like even though we went different directions on the train, or we'd be playing football on Fridays, and all of a sudden it's like it's middle of winter, and I remember, because you always had that big huge coat. You had that big huge like black coat, and you'd have your head, and I'd be talking to you on the train platform, and all of a sudden you're just looking around, you got this like cool look on your face. And I'm talking, and all of a sudden you kind of look over at me, and your eyes bug out, and you kind of give me that, like, oh, you're talking to me kind of look? And I'm like, oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm sitting here talking to nobody.
And you got to point out, you know, what kind of headphones I had as well, because I did not do little earbud thing.
You had, I think they were, like, orange. I seem to remember you had, not like, the big fuzzy orange ads on them. I see. That's why I don't know why I envision you with that.
I may have over the years, but normally my go-to headphones were the Kobe brand find.
And that's not like Bryant.
That you could find in any like dollar store or you know, any of your high quality, you know, thrift stores around the whatever neighborhood. But hey, they worked. Okay, they sounded great, and they were huge. They were like somebody once described them as kicker boxes that I was wearing on my head. But they worked perfectly in the winter because they also functioned as my earmuffs. So, you know, that's another reason why I couldn't hear you is because they were completely covering my ears. And they sounded wonderful. The only problem with them is I literally, over the years, must have bought about probably 40 pair of them because they didn't last very long.
Yeah, I went through a lot of headphones, mostly due to theft. Like, they get stolen out of my locker. They just disappear. But I was always like Koss or Sony. I mean, toward, you know, I still have, and now it's the Sennheiser. Those are good. I'll tell you what, I got a pair of those up in my bedroom. I plug into my iPad when I want to listen to tunes off, you know, YouTube or off anything, you know, even off of the iTunes on my computer. Very good quality headphones. Sennheiser, send me the cash. Show me the money.
We talked about Sennheiser on the last show because I have a pair of Sennheisers as well. And the funny part about that is I've lived down here in Memphis now for going on 4 years. I bought those Sennheisers in Chicago, but I didn't have them that long, maybe a year, maybe less than a year. So they didn't have to battle through multiple Chicago winters and whatnot. And so since I moved down here, I've never taken public transportation down here in Memphis because, you know, we have cars, so I don't take the headphones out with me. So they're still here and they still work. And they weren't expensive at all. Believe me, I remember all the times in my life that I bought headphones that cost more than like $30 or $40. And it's only been maybe once or twice, and they didn't last very long, and that was the end of that. I said, never again. All these Beats by Dre
not
headphones.
Not one more.
No. Not, you know, the $100, $200 headphones that I've come across in the stores. Never. You will never, ever, ever, ever catch me paying $200 for a pair of motherfucking headphones. That is some bullshit.
Beats. No Beats,
no Beats by Dre. No Beats by nobody.
No
I'm
Bose
not,
Quiet Comfort. I mean, come on.
What did you pay for your Sennheisers? Because I'm guessing it's what I paid.
60? About 60.
I don't think I paid 60. I think I paid maybe 30 or 40.
Yeah,
and they're wonderful.
But I mean, I love them. I mean, I bought. See, here's the reason that I had to spend the extra because I had to get the ones that are like the ones that not just the noise canceling. So I don't catch a lot of outside noise because that wasn't as big of a deal because I listen to them generally in bed. There's not a lot of outside noise in bed, but
right.
I would have to listen to them right next to my wife. So I had to buy ones that weren't going to wake her up.
Ah, okay.
And you do have to spend a little bit to get the ones with the better padding and, you know, and a little bit more noise shielding and stuff on them because my other headphones, my Sony headphones, which also I loved a lot, she could basically hear everything I heard. So, and I like to
completely
listen to music.
The piece of purpose.
You know, this is where my wife and I are different is I love loud music. Love it.
Yeah.
And my wife, like, if it gets any volume to it at all, turn it down, you know. And my daughter, too, she can't handle the loud stuff. If I turn music up at all of a sudden the hands go over her ear, daddy, loud, you know.
God.
So, and no, me, it can't be loud enough. If it's something I really like, I'm cranking the shit out of it. Like in my car, oh, man, yeah. So, that's what I needed. So I did spend a little extra for headphones so I could turn up the volume and not wake up my wife.
Okay. That makes sense.
And so if I don't really feel like I have to justify my purchase, but I just did.
I'm telling you, there was one time where I was desperate for headphones, whatever Kobe's I had just broken, whatever piece of shit store that was selling the Kobe's had just closed. And so I'm in, you know, it was either Tower Records or some other, you know, two-floor record store. You know those ones downtown Chicago that's like these humongous old record shops. When I say record, you know, everyone under 30 is like, what is a record? What is he talking about?
Is that like iTunes? Is that like Amazon?
So I'm in one of those places, Coconuts or something like that. And
wow,
so I'm looking at
Coconuts. Jeez.
And I'm looking at their headphone section, and there's nothing resembling Kobe there. And when I say resembling Kobe, I mean there's nothing there for in the $20 to $25 range that's big overhead, like earmuff style. Anything big overhead earmuff style, $50 was like the cheapest. And so I go in for one of these $50 over-the-ear style headphones, and I remember the brand name still because they're still going today and they're still popular. They were called Skull Crusher. These motherfucking...
Are you sure it wasn't Skull Candy? Skull Crusher sounds like a horror movie.
Skull Candy, Skull Crusher, whatever.
It's all the same.
Yeah.
Bend it.
These motherfucking headphones must have lasted me about 3 weeks before they broke on me. And that was it. That's the last time.
We're not getting any Skull Crusher endorsement deals.
Fuck you, Skull Crusher. Whoever's listening that's related to Skull Candy, Skull Crusher, whatever the fuck name this company was, fuck you and your parents and all of you can go to hell. You got to be crazy with overpriced bullshit. Sounded like basically like my Kobe's, you know, wasn't any higher quality as far as the sound goes, and fragile as hell, and wound up breaking on me because I had them in my book bag and pulled them out and they were completely snapped. The Kobe's went in my book bag all the time and didn't snap, all right? It wasn't like I was throwing the bag around. It wasn't like I was any rougher with them than I should have been. All I did was gently place them in my book bag and I pull them out and they're just snapped. And I was like, "Oh, I don't fucking believe this." So
well, you just went like Lee Elia on headphones there, and that's
right
the Skull Crusher.
My fucking ass, right downtown, and print it. Oh, so yeah, that and then the Beats by Dre and all these headphones out now that are, you know, in the $200 range. When I walked by a pair of, it wasn't Beats by Dre, it was some other way overpriced brand for like $150. I was in a Costco with my wife, and I walked by some setup where the headphones were there and you could put them on it. It was playing some music so you could sample how great they sounded. And I, you know, rolling my eyes, I put them on, like, okay, they're going to sound like the greatest headphones I've ever heard. And I put them on, and they sounded like about the greatest headphones I've ever heard. But I'm not paying $150 for some motherfucking headphones. I don't care how great they sounded. They sounded awesome. I admit that. But no, I'm not going to do that. I can't. I just can't.
I tried on a pair of the Bose Quiet Comfort headphones. I was at Best Buy, Mall of America, and they were. I was really looking for a nice set of headphones. It really, this was sort of what the culmination was when I finally bought my Sennheisers. I was looking for a long time for a good noise canceling, not a lot of bleeding noise headphones. So I tried on the $300 set.
Oh my God.
And I put on the music and it's going through this demo and it's it's got stuff on a screen in front of you. And I'm sitting there and I'm listening to it and I'm like, okay, yeah, these sound pretty good. And I'm going through it and I'm like, oh yeah, it's playing some nice music. And then all of a sudden it says right on the screen, take off the headphones. You're like, okay. So I take off the headphones and I realize it was blaring noise at me the whole time I had these headphones on and I did not notice them. And I was just like, holy shit, that was cool. And I'm still not spending $300 for these headphones. That was the coolest thing, that I'm standing there and it's just blasting all this white noise at me. Basically like if you're on a train or on a plane, you know, something like that. I'm thinking, man, this would have been awesome when I was on the train going to school all those years, taking the subway and the L. Or that would be elevated train for the non-Chicago people.
Yes.
And, I was like, well, this would have been awesome. First of all, though, if I was wearing a pair of $300 headphones to high school, those totally would have gotten jacked.
Completely.
So,
great
demo, but I'm not spending that kind of money. No way.
Right. That reminds me of the days when I would have my headphones up so loud that people would actually tap me on the shoulder to say, turn it down, because they could hear it and it was disturbing their peaceful train ride or whatever.
You're on the train.
Exactly.
You expect quiet on the train?
I'm disturbing your peacefulness at the squealing wheels of the train, the loud, as it turns the corners, and all the rumbling and rattling and all that, disturbing your enjoyment of that place.
Before my wife kills me for being down here forever, what did we need to get to in the after show here?
Oh, perfect timing. My tape just ran out, so I mean.
Oh, good.
Make that switch right now. So I'm listening to a wrestling podcast, and it's Dave Meltzer, who founded the wrestling coach. He has a Dave podcast. He was discussing the Wrestling Observer, which is a different newsletter, the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame, and their requirements and their nominees, I guess, this year. And the topic of Sting, the wrestler Sting, came up. And I guess Dave Meltzer and his co-host for this particular show, Jason Powell, who runs another different newsletter and podcast, I guess they voted no on Sting into the Wrestler Hall of Fame based on the criteria of he didn't, successful as he was, as popular as he may have been, he didn't draw enough money. He didn't, when he was given a run world heavyweight title, he didn't have viewers and money to the arena, enough people buying tickets, considered a top draw of his era. And on top of that, his ring work sucked. He wasn't, an actual wrestler worker. Into that, somebody calls into the show, and he's a Sting fan. Some Sting fan calls into the show, and very passionately to tell Wade Keller, why he's about Sting not being a Hall of Famer. Passionate is one thing. Passionate is great. However, the actual content of the argument basically boiled down to Sting's a Hall of Famer because he's an icon. And here's the thing about that. You get the thought of the word icon in your head about Sting unless WCW puts that in your head. When Sting worked for WCW, they had a couple of different tags for him. He was the franchise Sting for a little while. And then later on in his career, when he was a little older, and feuding with Hulk Hogan, they called him the Icon Sting. This is the only reason anyone is calling in declaring Sting as an icon, is because WCW put that word in people's heads as a nickname. And that was the entire argument. Not argue the merits of the fact that Sting didn't draw. He couldn't argue the merits of Sting being a bad in-ring worker. He just kept saying over and over again, basically, Sting's an icon. Of course he's a Hall of Famer, man. I love Sting. He's an icon. How dare you say that he's not a Hall of Famer? He's an icon. You got to let me talk. I'm talking now. You've had your piece, and now let me talk. Let me tell you why Sting is a Hall of Famer. Because he's an icon. It's like, okay, whatever. Here's the thing. Sting's one of my favorites, too. He's one of my all-time favorites. I have very good memories of Sting. He's one of my guys from when I was a kid, when I was really getting into wrestling, when I was, 8, 9, 10 years old, is when he first came along. And he had this little yell that he did. He cupped his hands to his mouth and did this, like almost primal scream into the air. And I found myself doing that a few times over. Hey, there's Tim Collins, another fireballer out of the Royals.
That's right.
So Sting's one of my guys, too. I understand the passion about liking Sting, from a young age. I get that. And the reason all this came into my mind is because I was seeing a therapist a couple months ago. I'm not ashamed to admit that I was seeing a therapist. and she was trying to introduce me to some sort of hypnotic therapy, which we never actually wound up doing because I didn't really, I guess, believe in it or what have you. But like the founding thought to it was the very first thing she wanted me to do to get ready, sort of get ready for, was she wanted me to go to a happy place because she wanted a place for me to mentally go if we went to somewhere really, really dark during this hypnotic therapy. Okay, fine. So the task she gave me, you know, and this wasn't like a homework assignment. She presented this to me right there as I'm sitting there, is come up with a happy time in your life that has no negative connotations around it whatsoever. Okay. So I think of my wife. That's the first thing I go to is my marriage. And I love my wife, and I have a happy marriage. But like every marriage, I would think, there are some times in it when things aren't exactly going perfectly. So I moved on from that. I sort of wanted to move away from that because there are a few negative things connotations you can get into there. Okay. Well, my wedding day was a very happy day. You know, one of the happiest days of my life. My dad was there. I was not there because I invited him, because I didn't invite. My dad was there because my aunt invited him, and she had this big, gracious, bleeding heart, and she thought it should be proper that her brother-in-law, my dad, should be at my wedding. Oh, fine. So 95% of my wedding day was wonderful, but, you know, 5% of it was not because my dad was there. Okay. I literally scrolled through in my mind all these times in my life, and I got all the way down to my childhood, and I made it all the way to Thanksgiving night 1987 in Chicago, Illinois, at the UIC Pavilion, where the wrestling event Starrcade 87 took place, and I was there live. I was there because my uncle got some tickets, got me out there. Me my uncle's best friend and some children that he was responsible for. I don't think they were his kids at all, but he brought some kids, and my uncle brought me, and a great time was had by all. It was absolutely a wonderful night. Sting was there. He was part of this event. He was in the opening match, as a matter of fact, so he's one of the first guys that I saw at the event. And what happened was, I'm thinking back on this event, and my therapist says, so what exactly about it was so happy? What made you happy about it? So I'm describing the excitement of, you know, pulling up in the car to the pavilion and seeing all the lights and everything, and seeing all the people walking to the event, and knowing that we're about to park and we're about to walk into the event and we're about to become, you know, a part of the biggest wrestling show of the year, and all the pageantry and excitement. And I'm about to go in and see my heroes, my guys that I've seen on television that were larger than life, and now I'm about to go actually see them live, close up, in person, in the wrestling ring, and all of that stuff. And I actually started to get emotional, and I didn't have any idea why. And I actually turned into a blubbering idiot on the couch for a second there. And I could not figure out for the life of, okay, what the hell's going on? This is my happy place. First of all, I had to go all the way down to, what was I, 11 years old? So 27 years ago to find a damn happy place in my life that didn't have any negative connotations. So that's bad enough. And then I come across it and actually get emotional about it. So what the hell? And only after I left did I come up with a theory. You know, I have all my theories about everything, to try to figure out why I became emotional about it. It's because there was some combination of being with guys, specifically my uncle, who's like my dad to me, who really did the things that a dad is supposed to do for a son, not what my actual dad did, which was, you know, show up every month or so and beat the hell out of me and call that parenting. That's not what my uncle did. My uncle actually did the good stuff with me. You know, show me how to be a man and all that. So there was a combination of that, being there that night specifically with him, you know, a year approximately after my mother's death, bonding with him and going to see my guys, my other guys, the guys on the TV, the heroes on my TV screen, and sitting down and getting to see that. And also it was all somewhat fresh in my mind because of the wonder of YouTube. I actually watched Starrcade 87 from beginning to end on YouTube recently, maybe 6 months ago, maybe around this past spring or so. So those memories that were there were mostly reinforced by watching the television version of the show, which I had never seen before. A couple of things were different from my memories, but it was mostly, you know, what I remembered. And what I remember was just how happy I was to see my guys. These are my heroes. These are my guys. Especially in that opening match, which featured Sting as part of a tag team with Jimmy Garvin and Michael P.S. Hayes. And all of this is for me to say, I guess, that no matter what you think of Sting or any other guy, any other athlete, any other childhood hero you have, no matter what anyone else thinks of their work rate or anything that they've done, the quality of their work, you still have that. You still have your memory of them as your childhood hero. No one is going to take that from you. Don't get threatened by anyone else's breakdown of your childhood hero. Because all of that is true about Sting and Jason Powell. He was a shitty worker in the ring. He was a terrible, at times, wrestler. He got better as his career went on, of course. But, yeah, he couldn't work. It's also true that they gave him the ball in 1990. They had him beat Ric Flair for the World Heavyweight title. I watched it live on pay-per-view. And the next 6 months were not very good business-wise in WCW. I was going to those house shows, I remember. I wasn't at the Halloween Havoc show in 1990 when Sting defended the title against Sid Vicious, but I remember the fact that I didn't really want to go because it was Sting against Sid Vicious. Sting's my guy, and I didn't want to go. It was there at the UIC Pavilion. It was in the same exact building as Starrcade 87, and I didn't go because I didn't want to go because there was something about Sting's work that made me not really want to see him in a world title match against another terrible worker in Sid Vicious. I wasn't interested. So all of that stuff is true. There's nothing in that analysis of it that's bad, but it doesn't change anything. He's still my guy. Sting is still my hero, one of my heroes from my childhood. He's obviously still the hero of that guy that was so emotional calling in, talking about, you know, you got to let Sting Hall of Famer, you got to vote him in. He's an icon. You know, obviously he's in the same boat as I am. That Sting was one of his heroes, one of his guys, one of his muscle-bound, you know, male role models on the TV screen growing up. And, you know, hopefully most other guys don't have the same issues about male role models that I have, because I obviously have a lot of issues surrounding that. But, you know, Sting's one of my guys. He's always going to be one of my guys. Nothing's going to change that. He's not a Hall of Famer. He's bad in the ring. He's not. He might go in the WWE Hall of Fame someday. Guess who else is in the WWE Hall of Fame? Pete Rose, okay? That's not anything to be taken seriously at all. But just, I guess my whole point is, don't let anybody else's analysis or opinion of anything that you liked or respected or what have you or just enjoyed, you know, at any time in your life, don't let that get affected by anyone else's opinion. You have your likes. They have their likes. Everyone has their own opinions. Just hold on to what you love and what you cherish. Don't let anybody else make any rulings or judgments on that, because nothing is going to change how I feel about Sting and Michael Hayes and all those other guys, no matter how many times they come up for Hall of Fame votes or what have you. Nothing is going to change that, and nothing should change that.
Wow, I couldn't have said that any better myself, but that's also because I never watched wrestling really growing up.
but it applies to other, you know, whatever your childhood idol is in as far as an athlete. I could go right to the 84 Cubs because that's what I know about you, but I don't know everything about you. There might be more athletes or somebody else altogether in a different field that you really loved and respected as a kid. And if someone had a discussion about them today and brought it up and said, oh God, those 84 Cubs, they didn't accomplish anything, they didn't do this or do that, that's not going to you shouldn't take offense to that. It's not going to change your enjoyment of that summer of that team.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. I mean, all those great memories I have of even all those awful Cubs teams growing up, or all the horrible TV shows I watched growing up. It's funny because, you know, I'd get home from school and it'd be, this is the mid 80s. So you get home and it's like G.I. Joe and Transformers. And this is what, you know, this wasn't your thing, but this is, I know we had a lot of friends that was their thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I loved it. I mean, I loved it so much growing up, especially, you know, I grew up watching Transformers and I own it all on DVD, and if I've gone back and I've watched it, it's terrible. But I still love it. I still love it. Somebody could be like, oh, my God, oh, it's a kiddie show. It's stupid. It's like, you know what? It evokes good memories. It's like you did for you. It takes you back to something when you didn't know any worse or any better. It was just those were great times, and you remember them.
And if someone had
your fondness for it isn't tainted by the fact that in reality it was probably, yeah, it wasn't very good, but it's what we had, and we enjoyed it and we liked it. That's why it's hard. You know, my daughter watches a lot of like what I would consider really stupid shows, but right. She's two. So what she likes, but this is what she likes, and she's going to grow up, and this is going to form her. I'm not going to make her sit there and watch Discovery Channel and History Channel or like educational stuff right now. No, not yet. She's still having too much fun watching Curious George and Disney shows and Mickey Mouse, and this is her fun. And she might not remember a lot of this because she's only two, but I know as she gets to be five and six, and she really gets into that age where the things that she likes at that age are going to be with her, like the music that she likes or the any sports or anything that she likes. Those are your heroes, you know? They're going to go with you, no matter how stupid they are.
That's pretty much what I was trying to say. If they have a Cartoon Hall of Fame, when someone slams Transformers or something like that, you're not going to call
or Tom
up
and Jerry.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah,
hey,
if somebody calls up.
Don't mess with our Tom and Jerry. that's right, Mister.
Them's fighting words.
That's right. No, if someone says Tom and Jerry sucks, good Lord, really? That's nothing. Nothing's ever going to take away my enjoyment of watching Tom and Jerry when I was a kid. Stooges or anything else silly, no. Or pro wrestling. You know, that was pretty much my whole point.
Well, that's okay, good, because I have to go and take over baby duty now. So I gotta get going. It's been a good show. Hopefully, I win a lot of these picks. I need to pad my lead. I need to get my one back too.
Looks like we only differ on five tomorrow. So
oh, good. So, you know what? We'll go. I'll take three.
you'll win three, and I'll win two.
That's right. That's right. So we'll go three and three for the week.
Yeah. All right.
Fun times.
Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Central for our recap show of Week 8. I'll try not to be as long-winded. He's Jay. I'm Dre. This is in much less detail, the podcast, and we will see you Tuesday night. Enjoy your football.